Welcome into the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm your host, Grayson Grunhafer, and today I am joined by Evan Miyakawa of EvanMia.com. Just all the analytics, all the transfer portal talk, all the news. Just, Evan, you've been covering it all. It's been really cool to watch, and it's been busy for you, though. Very hectic, and it has been for us as well. But how are you doing today, and how has it been just kind of watching the craziness unfold?
I feel like every single off season the last several years since COVID, pretty much, it always surprises me the new developments that we're seeing in this wild west of the transfer portal, of name, image, and likeness. Every single year we say that we're going to get more rules and regulations, and every single year new crazy stuff happens that no one predicts. So that's what we're seeing again this year. It's been pretty crazy to see the amount of money going around for players, the amount of budgets that teams are floating, the quick movement. It's been something to behold for sure.
So off the top, a lot of people talking about Baylor have been, I think, looking at Baylor's portal haul, and I think some people have come away somehow underwhelmed by it, and others have come away thinking it's really, really good. I know you're in the camp of that. I think a part of the equation is, I think people are confused on how much money Baylor spent on the transfer portal and trying to figure out, did they spend at a level that is competitive? Did they spend at a top 25 level based on, you know, the guys that they landed, based on what you've seen? Do you feel like Baylor is kind of in that mold and being competitive enough with NIL?
I think so. And I think, you know, oftentimes what you see with programs like Baylor who have an underwhelming season after committing a lot of resources is that you may not necessarily be able to convince whatever sources you get your NIL from. You may not be able to get that same amount the next year. So what you have to do is make the best with what you have and show that you're going in the right direction. And then a lot of times it's the year after that you really capitalize. The big thing for me this year is that last season, Baylor basically had no returners to speak of, especially once Rob Wright left for BYU, which was not the original plan. And so they retooled through the portal. But they got a lot of guys who were, you know, obviously there was a lot of injury issues with Baylor last season, but also a lot of guys who were kind of unproven at the high major ranks, and a lot of them didn't pan out in the way that they wanted. And based on looking at the analytics last season, though I liked a lot of the names they brought in last year, it was a team entirely comprised of transfers. And this year, not only do you have, you know, some good freshmen coming in like they have had typically, but you also have some key returners coming back, or guys who were at least on the practice team last year, even if guys like Justin Bodo didn't play a single minute. You already have that level of continuity that they've struggled to have like last season. And so right now, not only do I think the overall quality of the average transfer they're bringing in is better this year, but you compare it with the returners, some of the talented freshmen coming in. And just big picture right now, last season, with having 9 transfers coming in, I still only had Baylor's incoming transfer class as a borderline top 30 class in the country. And this year, even though they have fewer transfers coming in, I have them as the 14th best incoming transfer class. So I just like their haul a lot better this year.
And the guy at the very top of that list, actually, he was my favorite transfer portal target they brought in. He's a guy who I think last year would have been potentially even more expensive because of how we're seeing guards being valued compared to big men. Caden Mingo, Penn State transfer. I know he's a top 20 portal prospect for you. He's a guy that I'm extremely intrigued by. I think he brings a lot that Baylor needs from a toughness, from a physicality standpoint that maybe you can't measure. But he's played a lot of basketball and played at a high major level. What do you think about Caden? What's Baylor getting with him?
I think Caden is the perfect kind of player who, I don't know exactly what they're paying Caden, but he's the type of guard in this current market that you're going to find a lot of value in relative to the sort of demand. And that's a couple different things. Number one, he was a highly regarded freshman coming out of high school. And oftentimes, those types of players, if they stay in college for multiple seasons, regardless of whether they really hit on their potential in year one or they're just kind of so-so, oftentimes if they stay in college, they will improve a lot from their freshman to sophomore year season. And that is certainly what I project for someone like Caden Mingo. And there have been a lot of guys in previous years who have followed that mold. So even though he's not a finished product yet, I anticipate that he will be an even better player this year, especially under Scott Drew. He's already got the playmaking chops. I think he creates a lot of value for his teammates and does not turn the ball over very much for someone who has the ball in his hands as much as he does. you know, he's coming along as a scorer. He certainly can improve as a three-point shooter, but he's already great from inside the arc. And as I mentioned before, it's really the potential that you are buying into with Kaden Mingo. And then you have to talk about the fact that this move paid off dividends in another way, too, because his brother is now in Waco as well. So all around, just a great move and definitely the cap or the best part of their portal haul for sure.
And speaking of Dylan, he's actually the second highest graded player according to your metrics. And it's interesting because, right, he's a freshman. There was a lot of talk about, you know, his decommitment from North Carolina. Interesting speculation that was thrown out there that I don't know was completely accurate. And so now you look at what they brought in with him. You bring in Kaden as well. Why do your metrics like Dylan so much? What's he going to bring to this Baylor team that is maybe unique to what they had a year ago and maybe even the year before, honestly?
Yeah, how I end up getting projected impact or values for freshmen is currently the way it works is it's basically an estimation of how a freshman with his level of sort of pedigree coming out of high school often performs in their freshman season. So for someone like Dylan, who is such a highly touted recruit, I basically look at how do the consensus recruiting services rate him coming into college. Now, obviously, a lot of those are slanted towards NBA potential rather than college, but it's still a pretty good benchmark for roughly the type of production that you would expect for someone coming into college. So for someone like Dylan with as high of a, you know, recruiting profile as he had, how have players like him in the past 5 to 10 seasons performed as a freshman in their first year of college? So his projection of being the second best player on Baylor is basically saying that a guy of similar caliber coming out of high school often performs at relatively that level. Now, there's a lot of uncertainty with that. Some guys are much better than the projection. Some are much worse. But in general, it does a pretty good job of kind of a baseline of what to expect from that level of freshman. And often, I find that most people think that my projections for freshmen are a little bit pessimistic about the level because oftentimes people just assume that freshmen are going to be hits. And the reality is that some are hits and some are misses. So with a lot of that uncertainty baked in, the fact that he's still projected as being the second best, you know, player for Baylor next year as a freshman, I think is a good sign.
So when you're talking about this duo Mingo backcourt that Baylor may have, is there enough shooting between the two of them for this to be successful in your eyes?
You know, I think that certainly is a question. Like I mentioned before, Kaden Mingo, that's an area that he can grow. And certainly Dylan, you know, it takes... it's not always a given that freshmen will shoot really well in their first year in college. There's a lot of great NBA shooters who in their first year in college were maybe a little bit more underwhelming. But we have seen Scott Drew and his staff help develop freshmen over the course of the season. I think VJ Edgecombe 2 years ago is a great example of someone who they knew he had the shooting potential. He was hit or miss in the first half of his freshman season. By the end of it, he was shooting really well. So that's kind of the hope, obviously not the exact same kind of player, but that's certainly the hope with someone like Dylan Mingo. And, you know, I also think he's not going to necessarily have to be the alpha scorer in this offense. At least that's not the level of reliance that you want. You want him to be a part of, you know, key cog in the system. And when you combine that with, you know, playing with someone in his brother, Kaden, who already has a year of college experience, certainly is comfortable with the ball in his hands. But then you have some of the other guys both returning and through the portal who are going to help add that offensive production. I think it's a pretty safe space to hopefully have Dylan develop a lot over his freshman year.
I think that leads me right into the next guy I wanted to talk about from this haul. So this was an interesting one. So Yale forward wing Isaac Seliskar, you go and look on different websites and he's like a borderline top 100 guy to a lot of people. And I think watching his film, you know, we kind of push back on that on our website. And then obviously he ends up committing. And a lot of people brought up that you actually have him, I think, right inside the top 50, if I'm correct. And so you kind of put that all together and you're going, man, this might be a really sneaky good get by Scott Drew and the staff, especially a little bit later in the cycle.
I love this pickup for Baylor in getting Isaac Seliskar. He is the type of player that when you're trying to project who is going to be successful going from the mid-major to the high-major ranks, and what are the kind of key stats that point to them being successful versus failing, he is the perfect kind of profile of someone that I think will do well. Oftentimes, the guys who fail when they transfer up are people who are very excellent in one key area, but do not have any other areas of strength that they're then bringing to the high-major ranks. It's often guys who are bucket-getters who can score a lot, but maybe don't have any other area of their game where they can contribute. Isaac Seliskar is excellent in many key areas. When you look at his individual skill projections and grades on my website, he is basically above average in scoring, rebounding, playmaking, and his court impact, which is a metric I have for evaluating how much you impact team performance outside of your regular box score statistics. So he is excellent in a lot of different areas. He's above average, good to great in terms of his shooting efficiencies from every area on the court, inside the arc, outside the arc, from the three throw stripe. He's a plus rebounder. He provides a good number of assists for teammates and rarely turns the ball over for someone who has the ball in his hands as much. So I think that regardless of whether he's struggling in one area, he's going to have two or three others that he's going to excel. And it's often types like him, especially when they come to a place like Baylor, that do really well. I think back several seasons to a guy like Ray J. Dennis. He was another player who, when he transferred to Baylor from the mid-major ranks, he also was multifaceted, and he certainly turned out to be a very good transfer for Baylor. Obviously a different kind of player, but I see similar types of success for Isaac Seliskar. And as you mentioned, he's pretty underrated nationally, and so I think that's part of why this get makes a lot of sense for Baylor.
So I think there's some questions about where he's going to play in a starting lineup. Is he going to be more of a wing, or can he play a small ball four like a Jalen Bridges did for Baylor? I think that's where I lean, but I also think that there's some merit in saying, well, you could also go bigger by having a three that's 6'6". Where do you see him fitting in?
Yeah, I haven't watched enough of his game and thought enough about the pieces specifically on this roster to suggest that. But I think either way, the part of what makes me excited about him is I think you can use him in a lot of different ways because he has all the skill areas. Like, there's not really an area in which I think he would be a massive weakness based on how he's employed in this lineup. And I think that type of flexibility is what teams are going for in this modern era. I mean, obviously, this is not quite the level of team that Michigan had last season, most likely. But the fact that Michigan was able to use a guy like Yaxel Endeborg, who typically played as a power forward down at the three, and he was that type of player that was so good in all these different areas, you could be flexible with how you use him. He's obviously a better player coming into that season than Seliskar is from Yale, but a similar type of guy where I don't really see a lot of weaknesses that you're going to be able to exploit based on putting him in a certain type of lineup. So I think he's going to be a very flexible tool in the toolkit for them.
So there's one guy that you're much lower on than I think I am, and it's not necessarily, I would say this, I think that you're spot on the defensive side, but I also think on the offensive side, there's something about Liberty transfer Brett Decker that gets me really excited. I've seen a lot of comparisons, and obviously watching a lot of Baylor basketball over the years, I think there's a little bit of a mixture of some Brady Heslip and some potentially Adam Flagler if he can take his off the dribble game to another level. You're a little lower on him. Tell me about Brett Decker. Do you not think his shooting can make up for the defense? Do you not think Baylor can put enough pieces around him to make up for it?
Well, let's start off the top. Brett Decker is a elite three-point shooter.
Yeah.
And when you look at the conclusion of this last season, he finished the year with the fifth highest grade in his three-point shooting of any player in Division I. So I expect that him to be a top three shooter going into the year. That's how good I think he's going to be from that area. So that's certainly a lock, and that also translates to his free throw shooting as well. As you mentioned, though, that's really the main thing that he does well offensively is shoot threes. How much does he offset all of the other stuff that he doesn't do? He's, you know, kind of a nothing in terms of rebounding, or, you know, assists. He doesn't turn the ball over, which is great. But he doesn't really do much defensively. And so his offensive projection is pretty good. His defensive projection is pretty terrible. Now, a lot of that can necessarily be written off as the context of where he was playing within Liberty. I've had some discussions with people who know his game well, and they basically think that the way that Liberty was using him defensively will not necessarily be the way that Baylor will be using him defensively. So some of that stuff hopefully will change, but there is nothing numerically in terms of either his defensive stats, blocks, steals, defensive rebounds, or just the team defensive performance while he was on the court at Liberty to suggest that he's a good defender. Now, Baylor certainly should have a better scheme than that, but that's some of my reservations and part of why, especially defensively, he doesn't qualify quite as high a projected impact level for Baylor as some of the other guys they have on the team.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to put some pieces around him. You hope that the combination of having two Mingos on your team that can, you know, really guard and really athletic can make up for some of that. Baylor also brought in one more transfer, a UAB forward, Evan Chapman, a guy who went to MCC. He's from the Waco area. A very interesting prospect, like really great motor, good rebounder, like things that are kind of, I don't know if you can necessarily weigh those analytically, the toughness, the physicality that Baylor definitely needs, but he was an intriguing one, local guy as well. And you actually are pretty, like, relatively high on him. What do you think about Chapman and what he brings to the floor?
Yeah, I think he's a solid add. I think he typifies the type of guy who, he's not going to be the first or second or third player on the scouting report for an opponent, but he's a really great role player who does certain things really well. I think one of the things that jumps out is he's an excellent rebounder, especially defensively. He's one of the best in the country. He's definitely solid in terms of a rim protector, and he also rarely turns the ball over, which is he's not the first player I've mentioned on this roster who's really excellent at that. So ball control, certainly something that you can count on with him. So yeah, hard to exactly say where he'll fit in the rotation or how many minutes he'll be getting, but I think this is a really solid piece. And as you mentioned, like, in this market, you're often looking for not just star players, but guys who are maybe underrated and will provide a lot more value at a sort of lower price point maybe than what other people might think of him. And so I think he's a very solid ad for this transfer portal class and for this squad overall.
One thing that stood out to me about everything you've talked about are, you know, how expensive big men were. I've heard you talk about it quite a bit. And so I turn around and I look at, okay, you know, where did Baylor gain an edge potentially? And man, I think just having Bodo Bodo on your roster and just kind of him sitting out this year, he's going to be like a hidden secret coming into this season for some people. And then Mayo Soye, who a lot of people may not know a lot about, he redshirted. Baylor's had a ton of success with redshirt guys like Freddie Gillespie, Everyday John. And now you're getting two guys that are really athletic, really big, who might have commanded something kind of crazy in the transfer portal, especially a year from now. What do you think about Baylor's big man combo? Can they kind of, you know, gain an edge there?
Yeah, I certainly think that getting Bodo Bodo back and hopefully healthy is huge for this team. There's a lot of people who were very excited about seeing what he could do in a Baylor uniform last year before he got injured. And the thing that sticks out to me about him is he has an argument to be probably the best or one of the best rebounders in all of college basketball, period, next season. Both offensively and defensively, he's in the top like one percentile in the entire sport in terms of his rebound grade and his projections in terms of his offensive and defensive rebounding rates. He's at a similar level in terms of his block rate, so he's a great rim protector. Another guy who doesn't turn the ball over hardly at all, and he's really, really efficient from inside the rim, which is where he does most of his scoring. So he's someone who, you know, you look at other guys who, you know, transferred last season from the mid-major ranks to the high-major ranks and were successful. A guy like Oscar Clough, who went from, I think, North Dakota State to Purdue, was really successful last year. I think Bodo Bodo could have a similar level of impact, and I think especially, as you mentioned, the market for bigs this offseason has been insanely high, and my research has shown that people or teams are on average overpaying for bigs by about 30% relative to the level of production that they're actually going to get out of those players, where you're finding a lot more value in the guards and forwards, which is where Baylor has really stocked up this offseason. So I think the fact that you just have Bodo Bodo sitting there and able to come back this year and not having to re-recruit that spot, and that's huge. That's really, really huge for them. So I think that's going to pay dividends, and obviously you would have wished to have him last year on this team, but I think they're really, really thankful that he's going to be, you know, on this roster for this coming season.
You know, one thing Baylor prioritized this offseason, and in large part, I think it was because of just the way last year went, lots of injuries. They ended up just having like six guys that they could trust, and they really kind of, they went in and got depth, and they focused on depth. And I know they didn't copy Michigan and how much size they had, but they certainly are copying Michigan and how much depth that they're trying to have and being able to play 9 or 10 guys. Do you think that is a really good strategy? And is there anything analytically that you've seen from teams that do play kind of more guys that helps them as they get further along in the season?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's helpful about depth is not just having an 8-9 man rotation by the end of the season. It is the fact that in this modern portal era, you often don't get your evaluations correct or accurate for every single player. I think the Baylor staff would say that they didn't get it quite right last season in terms of what they were hoping from some of their players versus what they got. And so for that reason, getting more quality players you think have the potential to be great means that even if one or two guys end up being less than what you're hoping for, you have more cracks at the apple, if you will, in terms of guys panning out. And potentially you might have a guy who you're bringing in to be your seventh or eighth best guy who ends up actually really hitting and be one of your, you know, best players last year and or this year. And so I think getting a lot of guys who could be really valuable is maybe gives you a higher floor than if you have less guys. And some of the team roster builds last season who were really star dependent, if either some of those star players get hurt or don't pan out, you're kind of toast. I think that's kind of what we saw with BYU last year, where they had three really great players. Some of the role players didn't pan out, so they had a lot less depth than you would expect. And then some of their star players got hurt. Texas Tech, another story where they just didn't quite reach the heights that they were hoping for once JT Toppin went down and the depth was an issue. So I really like having that level of rotational depth, and hopefully that will pan out for Baylor this year.
So I got one more question for you. You sent me the metrics on Baylor, and currently they're somewhere, and I know there's more caveats to this, but their ranking is somewhere between 8 and 19, 10 to 16 on offense, 7 to 24 on defense. I guess I think I'd rather put it here. Do you feel like Baylor has a top 20 roster based on what you've seen them kind of accumulate compared to other teams? Is that where you're sitting at here on April 30th?
Yes, I think top 20 is pretty realistic in terms of where, you know, their roster will end up being in the preseason based on the total amount of talent they have on paper compared to every other team once these rosters get finalized. And that's going to be an improvement from last season. I had them as about the 40th best roster in the preseason coming into the season. So if we're talking about a roster that's even the 20th best, that's a significant improvement. And obviously with the sort of revamped coaching staff and them hoping to have a lot more success in developing players and getting the most out of the team during the season than maybe what they had last year, I think there's a lot of optimism that this is going to be a much improved team.
Awesome. Evan, please tell everyone where they can find your work, what you have coming up, just anything you want to advertise about what you're doing over at evanmia.com.
Yeah, well, you can find links to everything at evanmia.com. All of my stuff I'm doing on social media, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff is there. You can find my the Evan Mia College Basketball Show, where I'm regularly talking about stuff that's going on in college basketball, digging into the numbers, talking to other people in the media about it. My blog, where I'm doing a lot of my sort of advanced research, is also, you can find links to that on evanmia.com. So everything that you want to find, evanmia.com is the place.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Evan. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.
Join Sikkim365 Premium on a $1 for 1 month trial to read our experts' notes and insights. Know about high school commits, off-season transfers, coaching staff changes, and so much more before the rest. Also, download the Sikkim365 app on your iPhone today to get instant notifications of breaking news, read up on the latest inside info, easily interact with other Baylor fans on our forums, and get alerts for anything published by your favorite staff members.